Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 127 of At Odds with Wrestling. Joe and Adam here. Adam, how's your week holding up, pal?
Not too bad. I spent the day listening to podcasts, including your appearance on Five Star Match Game.
Oh, hey. It feels like it happened like a week ago. I don't remember what happened.
You know, I think, again, no spoilers here. Go listen to the show. Go listen to the episode. But I think you did well for yourself, even though it's not necessarily your wheelhouse topics. But on a related note, I look forward to remastered versions of all the IWTV shows where they take the Adam Van special and just insert it like George Lucas putting Jabba in New Hope, you know?
Adding a new audio track. Sure.
Yep. I'm looking forward to that being done. So any commentators out there, just make sure you record your voice and we'll send it along to Jerry.
We don't even need to do that. We could just I'm sure Jerry could voice modulate it. But that being said, I don't think they've gone out and taken out they haven't gone and taken out much worse things or people.
Uh-huh.
And that list gets longer and longer on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to go in to add things.
Well, you know how they had to go and take Jesse Ventura out of all the old WWE, WWF stuff, you know, when they ever had the lawsuit? They just need to have you go in and redub certain things whenever there's a redacted person on commentary.
Well, I told you anyway, next time that I get a podcast offer to be on another show, I'm going to offer it up to you. Unless I get another offer to be on Between the Sheets, that's earmarked for Ed.
That's true. And I've gone on record. I'm not smart enough to do a journalism and show up on there, so it's okay.
You don't even need to do a journalism. They send you all the notes, and all you got to do is just read the notes and then maybe have an interesting anecdote for something that happened during the course of things.
Interesting's the hard part. I don't know.
You'd be surprising anyway. Yeah. Enough of that. Yeah.
I also, Joe, in my podcast listening today, I made sure to listen to MC True Long Island Story, because I don't know if you know this, but Broski and I had a brief falling out this week, but we came through it and our friendship is stronger than ever now because of it. So I had to make sure to listen to that.
Now, I get the I wait for the YouTube version to go up.
Mm-hmm.
Just so I can watch it, you know. I've been so this is from a completely different podcast, but you know, I've been a podcast person for a long time, but because so many people are putting stuff up on YouTube as well, which I'm firmly against, okay? I'm against you just putting your podcast up on YouTube. And I know a lot of people do it, and that's you, man. That's one more channel, that's one more avenue that people are going to find your stuff or whatever it is. And I know certain pod catcher hosting sites like Podbean automatically do it for you, essentially, but it's essentially just your podcast with your logo there, and there's nothing going on there. If you have a video element, okay, maybe on the Can Chris Hero Save Wrestling one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had it up because they were supposed to do a video element with it as well, where it was a watch-along with a match that he had with Bryan Danielson and PWG. But three or four episodes in, Hero continually has audio and visual stuff that they just leave in, so I get mad when I watch the video version. But at least on the video version of MC True Broski Story, whatever it's called, he's a little bit more of a showman, so he's showing the old sketches and the this and the that. So I feel better watching that because, you know, Broski at least is no dummy when it comes to that.
Yeah, I never watch the YouTube version of anything, especially if it's a podcast also, just because I start and stop stuff. I'll listen to some stuff in the car, you know. So it's just, I can't watch YouTube in the car. It's not safe.
Well, being that I'm at a desk for my job at home, you know, I got a computer here and I got a computer there. You know, I could just turn my head. It's a little bit easier, right?
I suppose.
Yeah. Anywho, let's get into our show, our podcast, which will never have a video element.
we're too pretty for people to look at. That's the problem. They'd be distracted all day.
Sure, that's what it is. That's what it is. But we're going to get into something that we start the show with here.
And now, At Odds with Wrestling presents This Day in Wrestling History.
And that's This Day in Wrestling History, as you heard that jingle. So on this day in wrestling history, I'm more transparent to Adam with this sort of stuff now.
Yeah.
Per his request. I'm not surprising him with shit. Today is Ric Flair's birthday.
Yeah, 1949, huh?
And doing my gazintas. He doesn't look a day over 72. Oh boy.
He had that segment on, I don't know if it was Raw, where he was talking to Charlotte backstage. And I swear to God, I paused it for a minute because he looked just like noticeably older than I remember him. Like, I get that he's looked like this for a long time, but for whatever reason, he just looked older during that segment. So I like kind of paused it and I tried to remember when the last time he looked like vintage Ric Flair. You know, like the WCW Ric Flair. And it just, I think we've, in my mind at least, we've known old Ric Flair for a long time. If that, I know I'm not making any sense, but like,
no, you are. I'm closing my, the last time that Ric Flair looked like Ric Flair.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when I close my mind, I have a hard time.
Yeah. Like maybe 2004.
Yeah.
And then it was maybe toward the tail end of the Evolution stuff, where his hair started thinning a little bit more and his skin started to become more of like a reddish brown as opposed to a brown, that he really started to show his age.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he retired from like, what was the retirement match with Shawn Michaels? What year was that?
How would I know that?
Well, listen, you're a Shawn Michaels guy. I figure you know his entire life history, you know?
Nah.
But it was the build-up to that match where he started really to show his age. Then he retires. Then he leaves WWF because he wants to keep wrestling, and he goes, like, TNA. And I don't have to say allegedly, like, starts ripping off companies for dates and stuff. Then when he comes back to WWF to do the Hall of Fame that following year, that was like the end of it. And as you said, if you point like 2004 as the last time that Ric Flair looked like what our mind's eye tells us Ric Flair looks like, he's looked like this version of Ric Flair that was on Monday Night Raw for 15 years.
Yeah.
Whereas Ric Flair in his prime was from like 1984 to 1999 maybe. So, like, 15 years one way, 15 years the other way, the line is, like, has passed, you know?
Yeah. Well, my question is, when's he working his next match? When's he going to need another payday and he shows up in AEW taking bumps from Cage?
Well, I don't know. Maybe that'll come up later. Who knows? but also on this day, in 2006, we'll jump around a little bit here. 2006, from Reading, Pennsylvania. Last week, we talked about Tag World Grand Prix in 2005. This time, it's Tag World Grand Prix 2006 in Reading. This is night two. If I remember correctly, night one was in Hellertown, if I remember correctly. So this is the same building that, you know, 2005 one was. Lot more international talent on this show. As I look over this, you can go look this up on Jerry's Internet Wrestling Emporium. But there was like a team from Torimon. There was a team from Dragador, which was like an offshoot or like a precursor to Dragon Gate that Skyda and Milano Collection AT were in. There was a team that was called Team Muga, which was Osamu Nishimura, who was a big name. But some of the more notable things that happened on this event include Jigsaw and Eric Cannon taking on the team of Kevin Steen and Sexy Eddie. Noticeable because Sexy Eddie had gained prominence maybe the summer before, being in Tournament of Death for CZW, where during the match he nicked an artery on his arm, and as the blood spurted out of his arm, he held his arm in a way so that he could drink the blood as it was coming out of his arm, like shooting into his mouth.
Nope.
Okay. And I know he did it at least once, but Kevin Steen swore multiple times in front of the crowd during the course of this. And as we had joked before, that very rarely is Jerry's Internet Wrestling Emporium going to go in and edit new stuff in or take stuff out. I'm almost certain if you go watch this, the edit was already done to take that out.
Ooh.
And also in the opening contest on this was Lance Steele and Lance Steele, the team of Team Lancelot, taking on the then at that time debuting Soldier Ant and Fire Ant of the Colony.
Was this the time traveling Lance Steele?
Yes.
And Lance Steele Prime.
Yes.
Okay.
They would this rivalry and the. There would dissension begin over young Lance Steele wanting to be friends with dragons, specifically Dragon, Lance Steele knowing that dragons are bad. This would lead to young Lance Steele becoming evil and losing a match where he had to be banished to, like, his own timeline or something.
Oh, I love it.
So, also on this day in wrestling history in 2012... also from Reading, at another venue, kind of like up the road from this previous venue, was another Chikara event. And this now is the timeline, but earlier in the timeline, of course, for real, not fake bullshit wrestling timeline, of the shows that I'm assigning. Like, the next time that I get a chance to assign a show, it's going to be from April of 2012. So eventually, our this days in wrestling history are going to line up with the shows that I'm assigning.
Okay.
But again, this is a Reading show. You know, Colony still teaming together. Fire Ant, Soldier Ant taking on Dasher and Mr. Touchdown. Archibald Peck versus Sarah Del Rey, which, if I remember correctly, is like the first time that Veronica took bumps and Sarah, you know, in a pro wrestling way, kind of like really beat the shit out of her. Ikaris and Chuck Taylor taking on Hollow Wicked and Ultramantis Black, where Ikaris was taunting the crowd, and there was a really funny moment where a fan told Ikaris that he had a stupid name, and then Ikaris returned back and said, "Oh yeah, what's your name?" And then the kid said, it just by sheer coincidence, the kid said that his name was what Ikaris's real name is. And you could see, like, Ikaris, like, I got nothing. You know what I mean? But also on this event, Brody Lee took on Jigsaw. And when we were talking about some of the other Brody Lee matches that were leading up to his departure from the indies and going to WWE, go and watch this match. Like, Brody Lee wrestles like a non-pilled up 1995 Shawn Michaels in this match. Like, he's crazy. Like, the shit he's doing in this match is unbelievable. Like, go out of your way and check this one out.
Okay.
But more importantly, day in wrestling history, and I love when this stuff lines up. 1995 in South Philadelphia. The event did not have a name before. But again, it just sounds like, you know, ECW's still in a little bit of a transition period. There's some hot angles and stuff that's happening at this point. But you're getting, like, matches like the Pit Bulls taking on Chad Austin and Joel Hartgood. Jason, the sexiest man alive, and Paul Loria taking on Mikey Whipwreck and Hack Myers. Too Cold Scorpio taking on Hector Guerrero. Okay. Axel Rotten and Ian Rotten taking on each other in a barbed wire baseball mat match. All right, I'm with you. Shane Douglas taking on Marty Jannetty. Always weird seeing Marty Jannetty in ECW. there was a Raven, Stevie, Sandman, Tommy Dreamer promo segment on this that was like a big brawl. I think this was the at least on TV debut of Stevie in the half shirt and the Daisy Dukes.
Very important for the time.
Also, Public Enemy do like a big angle where Rocco Rock was injured and they come out in a wheelchair. Benoit and Malenko come out and attack them. That leads into Benoit and Malenko against Taz and Sabu for the tag titles. Benoit and Malenko win the tag titles after Taz and Sabu just won them the show prior. And this is like the build to the three-way dance, which means that'll probably come up in our This Day in Wrestling History in about 3 weeks. Now, the night before, again, it's this day, but the night before was an event at the Flagstaff in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, which was the very first ECW show I ever went to.
Okay.
But the main event of this was to be Sandman versus Cactus Jack. Sandman, again, was 1995, not cleared to wrestle. So keep that in mind of how fucked up he must have been if he wasn't cleared to wrestle in ECW. So they bring out a suitable replacement, which was former Tri-State Alliance precursor to ECW alumni DC Drake. Kind of goes over like a fart in church. Cactus makes short work of him. Brawls with the Sandman, and this was the debut of Sandman wearing the red Sandman or the red shirt and the red, white, and blue flag pants.
Okay.
Bip, bip, bip. Sandman and Cactus are brawling. Throw Sandman into the box. Cactus pulls him out with the thing, the curtain still over him, and just like a certain Candy Dots would say, if you come out of a box, you're instantly over. But it doesn't matter because Cactus pulls the curtain off him and wearing the same red shirt and red, white, and blue pants is Terry Funk. As a heel, coming back to avenge against Cactus Jack, crowd goes crazy. A super-duper hot angle in the history of ECW.
I was going to say, first the crowd gets DC Drake and then Terry Funk. How many refunds did Paul have to give out
that night? Oh, how dare you. How dare you. Again, this is some great stuff. Like this... this was like the beginning of peak ECW. Like, I know over on Final Wrestling Place, Tim had said that he started with the Shane Douglas throwing down the NWA title thing from August of 94. And like from August to November, they're still trying to get their footing. November to this point, they're still kind of shaking things off, but it's becoming more of what ECW is. So it's like this show to April is really where it forms. And then over the summer into the September, November shows is really where like ECW becomes ECW that everyone remembers.
Yeah, I think as you go further along in 95, there's fewer and fewer like names that you don't recognize.
Right.
You know, like you look at this and I've never heard of Chad Austin, Joel Hartgood or DC Drake. But like maybe 6 months later, it's all instantly recognizable people, you know?
Exactly. So lots of stuff, big day in wrestling history. I love looking back at these sort of things.
Yeah.
So Adam, let's start with you, my good man. Likes and dislikes from the last 7 days here in professional wrestling.
All right. I'm going to start off with the dislike because I am contractually obligated to speak of this. And that is the continuing questionable booking of the AEW women's division. First off, we had my gripe a few weeks ago that Maki Ito lost in the women's tournament. And now on YouTube this week, we had Nyla Rose defeat the face of women's wrestling.
The face
on YouTube. It was a fun match. Like I thought it was, it could have gone either way. I'm not surprised in the end that AEW had Nyla Rose win because for whatever reason, they're determined that nobody gets a push for the women's title other than like Riho and Nyla Rose for some reason. But they basically had Nyla Rose beat the face of women's wrestling. Then on AEW Dynamite this week, she takes out Britt Baker. Again, another good match. Couple that with the fact that now you have Anna Jay injured and Sheeta's never on TV. She might have been on recently, but I honestly can't even remember the last time I saw her wrestle. We've talked about this a bunch of times, but the AEW women's division is not a focal point, and it doesn't help that they're pushing the same two or three people nonstop. So that's my other dislike this week is the fact that, Nyla Rose beat not only Conti, but Britt Baker.
If the spoilers are to be believed, I feel as though this is the booking attempting to, what could I say? How could I say this without really giving things away? I don't want to say righting a wrong, but at least attempting to course correct in the booking some of the missteps that they made pre-pandemic. Knowing that all of these other folks, whether it be Britt Baker, whether it be Ty Conte, whether it be the new crop coming over from Japan, that they can be possibly rehabbed where maybe others cannot, and this might be like fourth time's a charm, maybe.
Okay.
I don't agree with the results. It is giving them a little bit more prominent place on TV. And I don't want to say, I don't want to do the classic three stars, both tried hard sort of thing. But I definitely feel as though this is a, them attempting to wrap up whatever storyline there would have, could have, should have been with Nyla Rose and Sheeta. Does that make any sense?
I guess, but I mean, that's a, at this point, a year and a half long storyline that hasn't been touched on in 6 months, like, let it go, you know, but I don't know, we'll see.
Right, and again, listen, I didn't love it or hate it. I thought the match on TV was good. I thought the match on YouTube was good with Ty Conti. These folks all look good in losing, and, you know, it's not in my likes or dislikes, but, you know, what's her name? Zoe Sky. What's her, the new girl on NXT?
Zoe Stark?
Zoe Stark. She had a good match in losing against Io Shirai, you know? She, you know, could have won, and then you could have, like, shocked the world and had this girl in her second match get a victory non-title over the champ. But, you know, sometimes people just look good in losing, and that's okay, too, sometimes.
Sure.
All right. So that was a dislike for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it was a little tough for me for dislikes this week. There wasn't a lot that really... got my goat or otherwise, you know? Mm. So I think it isn't my dislikes, only because there seems to be some confusion or miscommunication in regards to what this barbed wire exploding ring match is going to be. John Moxley, when he cuts his like last week, we get the whole thing of Kenny setting it up that it's going to be, Kenny specifically says, a no ropes barbed wire exploding ring match, right? Okay. Moxley cuts his promo. He's very vague about what it is. He says the things. He says it's in the Japanese magazines. He's giving you the ideas and the feelings of what those matches could and would be. Then Excalibur on commentary says that it's going to be barbed wire wrapped around the ropes. And there's going to be, as he put it, landmines outside the ring. Okay. I want it to be, in my mind's eye, no rope, barbed wire, like we saw in August of 1997 for America's purposes with Cactus Jack and Terry Funk. When you say exploding, I want there to be, at the very least, the gimmick where they hit the barbed wire and the explosion goes off. I want there to be the barbed wire boards on the outside that have the explosions triggered on them, that they bring those boards into the ring and are throwing each other into those. But if they just do the gimmick where it's barbed wire wrapped around the ropes, that's unforgivable. That's bullshit. And Tony Khan, you know better.
Do you think it's a situation where even Tony Khan himself had it in his mind, hey, let's go ahead and go all out and do a nuts Japanese style exploding barbed wire death match, whatever. And like the network was like, no, you can't do that. You can do this. And they're scrambling at the last minute to kind of, you know, do what the network allows them to do, maybe. You know, give Tony the benefit of the doubt, you know?
So it's not on TV, it's on pay-per-view, so they can really kind of get away with whatever they want.
Okay, I'm getting my super shows mixed up because they have the Shaq show, and I thought they were on the same show. All right, then, yeah, I don't know. Unforgivable, then. Maybe the venue, like, insurance purposes. I just don't see why you would advertise one thing and then try to water it down. You know, I'm just trying to rack my brain as to why they would change it other than just blatant false advertising.
Right, so that's the thing. I don't think it's... I don't want to think that it's false advertising, and I don't want to think that it's a bait and switch. I want to think that it's unclarity. Mm-hmm. That they needed to, from the onset, to say, like, this is what we're going to do. Because if Kenny just said, barbed wire exploding, a barbed wire match with explosions, and really, I'm nitpicking here, man, but I want to see that 90s FMW, IWA Japan style match, bring the ropes down, put the barbed wire up. The side, like, even if you want to do the gimmick where, like, the Onita one where there's a timer, and if the match, like, if at a certain amount of time the ring explodes, quote unquote, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you say no rope, barbed wire exploding ring match, it paints a picture in my head, and then the following week on TV, you're smearing shit on that painting, you know? I don't know, man. Like, everyone, there needs to be number one priority. Get Eddie Kingston a figure in the next Unrivaled Figures line. Number two agenda on the meeting. Everyone get on the same goddamn page of what this match is going to be.
Yeah, I definitely feel like it. Somebody had to have stepped in and said, no, you can't do that. Or it's not feasible in the venue or something. You know, I don't know.
The venue that Tony Khan's family owns.
Oh, no, I don't mean it like I just mean for insurance purposes. You know, there's red tape everywhere. I just get, you know, I'm an AEW pants shitter. I'm trying to, you know, back my company here.
All right. What do you got?
All right, Joe, I'll go with the like, and this is really simple. On NXT this week, I absolutely loved all the vignettes of Cameron Grimes trying to emulate Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase's basketball dribble gimmick. Where basically he started watching the video, but didn't watch all of it because he figured he got the gist of it, and offered to pay somebody $1,000 if they can dribble a basketball 10 times and he doesn't know that he's supposed to kick it out. Then obviously he gets smarter. And the second time a woman basically dribbles through her legs, outsmarting Cameron Grimes. And then finally on the third attempt, Grimes just simply punches the guy out and exclaims that money can buy happiness. I am looking forward to Cameron Grimes spending through all of his money and slowly becoming broke. I want more of this on NXT TV every week.
I enjoyed these skits. I enjoy Cameron Grimes being the world's dumbest rich person and wanting to be like, not only wanting to be like a rich person, but very specifically wanting to be like a rich person in wrestling. And I'd love for him to recreate any and all of the previous Million Dollar Man skits, but do them like, and not get the gist of them or get fleeced in doing so. I think today I saw floating around, or recently this week, was one of the anniversaries of the skits of DiBiase getting the Million Dollar Belt commissioned, right?
Yeah.
So, like, there needs to be a series of vignettes where Cameron Grimes goes and he gets a title belt commissioned. And then, like, maybe the guy, like, the place that he goes to, like, rips him off. Or maybe, like, as a rib, you know, to kind of fit in more with his Twitter persona than his on-screen persona, which they're starting to meld together. Malcolm Bivens helps him out and refers him to a guy. And then that guy ends up rolling Cameron Grimes, but he didn't have all of his money on him. And then the guy ends up selling, like, in it, or, oh, shit, and listen to this. I'm booking this on the fly. I might delete this from the podcast only so someone doesn't steal the great idea, right? So then Cameron Grimes ends up, like, in a storage center somewhere down in Orlando, and he goes to, like, Super Gabby's shed and buys a Million Dollar Man replica belt off him, and Super Gabby, like, charged him, like, all this money for it. And then he's going on and he finds out it's just a toy belt, and he goes and tries to get his money back. And Super Gabby's, like, just no longer there. Like, everything that was in that storage thing is gone. It's just like a ghost town, you know? So stuff like that. But I will say, I just hope that Anthony, who got the $1,000 off of Cameron Grimes in that first skit, uses that money to get some better sponsors for the best morning show in World Wrestling Entertainment, which is Ever Rise in the Morning. Because that's the Anthony. That's the guy. The first guy who's like, oh, you didn't watch the whole video. That's the Anthony from the Ever-Rise videos.
Okay. I also not want...
Baker's the one who gets the papers thrown at him.
No. All right. I also want somebody to be Cameron Grimes' Virgil. You know, like his valet at some point. We need that to happen. And I am a little bit disappointed. Speaking of Malcolm Bivens, during that segment on NXT when he just popped up from behind the trainer's table, you know, where he was just hiding when Leon Ruff was being attended to. I really wish Malcolm Bivens, after that he was done talking to Ruff, just went back and squatted behind it again, like as if he just lives there now. I thought that would have been a funny little add-on, but Bivens is awesome.
Well, I think, you know, before he was a character on TV and he was still down in NXT, he would do a lot of that sort of shit in his, like, little YouTube skits and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I like seeing them integrate that sort of stuff that he's been doing for a while online into the TV character.
Yeah. All right, what do you got?
Okay, let's go with the like, right? Looking at my likes. I liked the Lance Archer Rey Fénix match main event on AEW this week. NXT on TV usually gives you like at least like one really knock, like there's never bad matches on NXT, but usually there's going to be like one knock your socks off match, and NXT did not have a knock your socks off match. You know, I run hot and cold on Lance Archer. I think maybe he does a little bit too much flippy-do for being such a big guy. And Rey Fénix, while he may be a fantastic high flyer, in his pre-indie or his pre-AEW wrapping up his indie dates days, he was very unreliable and cost a lot of independent promoters a lot of money on flights and so forth. So I always have that caveat in the back of my head. With those preconceived notions going into this match, I really enjoyed it quite a bit. It was a hell of a main event for AEW, not involving like their super top tier EVP type talent.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see that being the headliner of the show. I felt like, you know, spoiler for my likes and dislikes later, or favorite show, that AEW was kind of light of a show this week. So it was odd that that was the main event. I did think it was a good match, definitely the best match on the show. I didn't like how there was a couple times Rey Fénix would botch a move and then just go and try for it again. And I feel like the announcers didn't do a very good job of covering that. Like, he was doing, I forget exactly what it was, but he was trying to do like a spinning back kick and he just whiffed on Archer. And then, but Excalibur called it as if he hit it. And then he tried it again and Excalibur called it as if he hit it again. You know, I don't know. It just seemed like it wasn't a great pairing, but definitely a good match and the best match on the show, but a couple head scratching moments for me.
Gotcha.
All right. I'll go with my final like, so I can close it out on a dislike. And that is the fact that, you know, for a long time, Joe, it's been well known that Impact Wrestling is an unsafe work environment.
Ooh.
And this week we had scheduled Eddie Edwards versus Brian Myers, but obviously Brian Myers is not fit to compete. He has, as everybody knows, a very serious eye injury. And on Impact this week, we had the debut of Brian Myers' personal attorney, the undefeated in the court of law, Mark Sterling Esquire, where he basically poured through Brian Myers' contract and got it so that Myers would be replaced by Hernandez. You know, that way, you know, Myers can obviously recuperate from his injury. And anyways, Eddie Edwards had his match with Hernandez. That's not the gist of it, or not the main part of it. But obviously, it's good to see that the world's most professional wrestling lawyer is now an Impact. But afterwards, we had Scott D'Amore announce Eddie Edwards versus Brian Myers' eye for an eye match, and then rebuff that by saying that that's the most ridiculous thing he's ever heard. And he's like, what's going to happen? Somebody's going to lose their eye and then a couple weeks later be fine? That's ridiculous. So I liked all that stuff. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased, but I thought it was very entertaining.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, Broski being the special guest referee in the match. And Scott DeMore's like, oh, you can be the referee, right? You're always ready. He goes, sure. And he goes, I don't want to see any sleeves on that referee shirt. And Broski's like, of course not. So I did like it. This, if there was a third like for this week, like this whole stuff, like all of those segments on the TV would have been in my stuff. Yeah. Mm. I don't love Hernandez. Hernandez, okay.
Well, he doesn't accept PayPal. That's his big problem.
Friends and family. If you accepted friends and family, you know? I think Hernandez's height of powers was like maybe like 2004 or 5 when Ric Flair looked like Ric Flair. but this was pointed out to me, I guess. Maybe Don Callis was on Talk and Shop, maybe?
Okay.
And they were talking about, like, whatever the plans are for Impact. And, you know, obviously Don Callis is still involved there with the creative and stuff. But I guess he had intimated that they are going to, like, you know, make Brian a featured player in Impact. And it's stuff like this. It's proving it. And I listened to Brian on Major Pod Network. It's the show that reviews the show of what Hawkins and Broski do, but it's not us. Major World Order. My apologies.
Okay.
And Brian had said on there that talent only goes so far without opportunity.
Yeah.
So I like that Brian, we've all known, I think, that Brian has had the talent, and I like the fact that he's getting the opportunity, and hopefully he gets more and more, you know? Yeah.
No, I agree. Absolutely.
So my last like, because you said you want to end it on a negative, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I am very happy with AEW's recent signing of the Big Show. I like the Big Show. He's a good man. He's been an over character on nationally televised professional wrestling for the better part of the last 20 some years. He's so important to, like, the wrestling fabric that, you know, you may not remember this, but he was the main event of WrestleMania last year.
Yeah, I actually brought that up to DJ this week when I was at the comic shop.
Yeah. So he still has a lot of cachet, and they're bringing him in as a commentator. It's going to be him and Tony Schiavone doing commentary on the new YouTube show that's going to be on Monday nights. I can almost certainly think that this is going to be, you know, the way that they're finally going to get their Shaq versus Big Show match that both of them have wanted to do for so long.
Yeah, and you mentioned that he's doing commentary. They made a special note, I believe, Tony Schiavone, that although Paul White's doing commentary, he does have his wrestling license.
That's right, in AEW.
Yes, in AEW. And I commented on Twitter, I paid Johnny Glitter $500 for a wrestling license in 2001, and I don't know if it's still valid.
I'm going to say that it's not.
Oh, damn it.
Because you don't need a license in Pennsylvania.
Ah, son of a bitch.
And I think Maryland you do.
Mm.
And maybe Maryland for sure, Virginia possibly. I'm sure someone will tell me afterwards. But it's like those lower Pennsylvania states.
I do not share your enthusiasm for want to keep calling him a Big Show. And you know what? I will just say the Big Show signing with AEW because I have griped about like Sting signing. So Paul White ain't no Sting. So if I wasn't, you know, crazy about Sting signing, I'm not going to be crazy about Paul White. I wouldn't mind seeing Paul White versus Shaq just for the car crash quality of it. But otherwise, I mean, I don't want to see him go over like Orange Cassidy or Eddie Kingston or something like that, you know, because wins and losses still matter to me, buddy. But like, and then what's he going to do? Just be another manager? You know, you'll have Tully Blanchard and Jake Roberts and Vicky Guerrero and Paul White, you know. So I don't know. Maybe they'll surprise me. Maybe they'll do something interesting with them, but I'm just kind of meh about it. I think it's just more of a shock factor. It's like, hey, WWE, we signed a big name from you. You know, say what you will about his in-ring work in 2020 or whatever, but he's still a major name of the Attitude Era, you know, and of WCW. So there is some cachet to him being signed, but I just don't know what you do with him.
If he's healthy and could work, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys on the show that he's, you know, obviously, listen, I'm going to come back and we're going to revisit this when he squashes, if he squashes Eddie Kingston, Orange Cassidy, etc. on TV. But if you want to have him be in a match with Jericho, I'm okay with that. If you want to have him be in a match with Jake Hager, I'm okay with that. I don't want to see them put him like next to guys like Luchasaurus to expose how not tall they are. But then on the flip side, I want to see him in matches against people like Marco Stunt to expose how tiny they are. But more importantly, as you say, this is more of a more or less of a I'm going to rub it in your face sort of thing of we signed this guy out from you, Vince. You know, hey, I'm sure there's people there that are thinking like, hey, if they sign Big Show, maybe they'll sign me. And maybe there's guys that aren't on good terms with WWF and aren't really working anywhere right now. And maybe it's like, oh, you know, if Big Show vouches for them, I guess, you know, maybe I'll give him a whirl. I don't know. It just, I think the signing of Big Show is less they signed to Vince and more is assigned to maybe other people in WWE whose contracts are up. To say, you know, maybe there's a place here for you.
Yeah. I mean, are you speaking specifically, and again, hypothetically, but people of Big Show's age, like not age, but like his generation? Because I feel like anybody who's in the younger generation would have looked at your Moxleys and your Brodies and, you know, whoever, and just already known that AEW could potentially be a greener grass situation.
I just think that this Big Show signing is going to mean a lot more, you know, 6 months from now, 8 months from now, 10 months from now than just Big Show going, leaving WWF. I think it could be a signal to a lot of other folks.
You just want to see, you want to see Randy Orton jump to AEW and beat everybody. That's what
no, I still want my Randy Orton NXT champion run. And then he can go to AEW.
And then he would just have a best of 27 match tournament against Orange Cassidy where it's a draw at the end, right? That's your dream?
Yes.
Okay. I haven't said this in a long, long, long time, but fuck Randy Orton.
Oh.
All right. My last one.
Yeah.
This is going to be a dislike, Joe.
Okay.
And I saw this announcement on Twitter a few days ago that a promotion called New South Pro Wrestling on March 5th and 6th is going to be holding a Haas tournament. Now, no disrespect to any of the competitors that were announced for this, but I was looking over the brackets, and I looked over a couple times. I even saved the graphic on my phone just to make sure I wasn't reading anything wrong. But this is a pretty impressive collection of Haases, but there is one name noticeably absent from the list, and it ain't me. I'm not a Haas. I'm not even a tiny Haas anymore. But I do not understand how you can have something labeled as a Haas tournament and not have as your number one seed and eventual winner the Boar. I just have to question the validity of this tournament. Now, again, I don't know if, you know, I'm assuming that this is called New South Pro Wrestling, and maybe it's a little bit of a drive for the Boar, but they should have the tournament up here, you know, just relocate the whole thing, because you cannot have a Haas tournament if the Boar isn't in it, and maybe Dan Champion, because you need somebody to do the job in the first round. But But, you know, good idea for a tournament. I wish the greatest of success to New South Pro Wrestling for this endeavor. But, you know, there's always going to be an asterisk next to the name of that winner, you know, because the Boar's not in this.
So if I'm not mistaken, this is the second annual Haas tournament that New South has put on. And I think this may have also, the first one was the impetus for the Boar to have a hashtag of Haas or not a Haas, where he judged if you were a Haas or not a Haas. And listen, a lot of people are going to tell you that the idea of what a Haas is nebulous. You know, just because you're big, that doesn't mean you're a Haas. And maybe you might not be, you know, over 6 feet tall. or you might not be over 200 pounds, but you fight like a hoss.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Dory Funk Jr. in the World Wrestling Entertainment was called Hoss Funk, and he's not a hoss, okay? If you're shorter than me, you're not a hoss. I'm more on the heavier end of things, so I'm not going to say that your weight goes against it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel as though you and I, at the very least, by proxy of the board, could be arbiters of who is a hoss and who isn't a hoss. I'm sure this will be a fine show, a nice little thing, but as you mentioned, it should be called the Not Quite a Hoss tournament or whatever it is. Like, I think Colin Delaney's in there, and Colin's a good guy. Colin's someone that I've known for, you know, over 15 years. And I think this is less, I want to be the best hoss out there, and more so, I want to get a payday. I don't handle most of the board's bookings. I try to. But if this one had come across my desk, I would have lobbied hard to get him down there. But I could barely get Mantis booked places, so I don't know if I'm your best representation.
Maybe for the third annual, just give the boar like a bye through the first round, you know, just based on, you know, body of work.
Now, in AIW out in Cleveland, the Duke has the Hoss boot, which was, you know, instituted because of me. It was one of the ideas that Thorne and Biggins ran with to do a Hoss cup. And I'm not going to say that, like, I approved everyone that was in the match. Like, God forbid, like, I would never expect them to run booking people through me. John and Chris know what a hoss is, and they put people in there that were big dudes, and, you know, they did big dude stuff, and it was like a good couple matches, but it's, you know, tough to keep these sort of things going around. But to keep the hoss boot relevant, they had the Duke win it by nefarious means, and a heel, you know, who is a questionable hoss at best, has the boot and claims that he's defending it against other hosses. We're just not, those are on shows that are not being taped. And that's good heel shit, brother.
Yeah.
So when an eventual hoss comes around and beats the Duke and is the new hoss champion, that's going to add a little bit more prestige to that gold spray painted boot. I mean, solid gold boot.
Nice.
All right. Cool. So, my last dislike, so you had mentioned Randy Orton before, and my last dislike isn't Randy Orton, but he was involved in it. There's been a lot of spooky shit going on Raw since The Fiend was burned alive at TLC pay-per-view. It's almost as though he's haunting the Thunderdome, even though they've moved the Thunderdome since he was burned. And it seems as though he's only haunting Randy Orton. But the haunting has gotten past haunting from this past week. And now apparently the curse of the Fiend has now taken on more of a voodoo curse, because in the middle of a promo, Randy Orton spit up black goo.
Great television.
Listen, I'm someone who unapologetically, while it was happening, and still to this day, enjoyed all the shenanigans and nonsense of Papa Shango. People's boots being lit on fire, Ultimate Warrior puking all over a bunch of backstage agents, goo pouring from the head of the Ultimate Warrior and from the wrist of Gene Okerlund. I'm all for this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason this is in my dislikes is, if you're going to go voodoo curse, go full voodoo curse. Okay? I want all the shit that Papa Shango did. I want a skit on Raw this past week, this upcoming week, of Randy Orton seeking out Papa Shango to try to get the curse lifted. But they ain't going to do that. It's just going to move on to something else stupid, where like Alexa Bliss's face appears on a TV screen, or like a puppet comes out and like laughs at Randy Orton or some shit like that, right? You've crossed the line from like weird demon sex dude, I don't know, to like voodoo curse, and now you're gonna veer back into like weird demon sex man. If it went full voodoo curse, I'm with you, but I feel there's a tease of a voodoo curse, which is bad television.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I believe that through Alexa Bliss, all things are possible. And if you want to do voodoo stuff this week and then do other types of spooky stuff next week, it's all on the table, you know. And while the Thunderdome itself may not be haunted, maybe it's just like the ring or something like that. And they did move the ring from one venue to another. And so it all makes complete sense. And how dare you question any of it?
I'm willing to buy into your bullshit, right? But at least stay consistent with your bullshit. Keep your satanic possessions over here and your voodoo curses over there. Once you start intermingling the two, we run into a problem.
All right. We'll see where it goes. You know, I'm sure that as this storyline evolves over the next 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 months, you know, we shall see where it goes. And we'll revisit it down the road.
All right, so I guess what did we like and what show did we like this week in comparison to the two?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I tipped my hat before saying that AEW was kind of light for me. I don't think either show was great. Obviously, the Archer versus Rey Fénix match was good. It was good to see Papa Buck get the shit beat out of him, or at least it was implied, so that was fun. But NXT had the Cameron Grimes stuff, and I did enjoy the Cross versus Legado del Fantasma street fight. And when Adam Cole got to low blow, Roderick Strong, I popped for that. And so I'm going to go NXT.
Wow. So this is, I think, 2 weeks in a row that you've gone NXT.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks in a row that I'm going AEW.
Ah, you pants shitter.
Again, NXT was fine. I did like the closing segment. I hope all three members of Legado del Fantasma got a bonus for killing themselves to try to make Killer Cross look like a killer. Every time that they pointed the camera over to Scarlett Bordeaux for her acting, a star was shaved off the match. She's not good in this role. This role is not her. She's trying and it ain't clicking.
Yeah.
You know,
I was gonna say she was just really good at just being attractive. Remember that was her gimmick?
I do.
Yeah, that seemed like it was a better fit.
Yeah. This like a lot of this her being a spooky lady who's also hot feels forced.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel natural.
Don't steal Alexa's gimmick.
Yeah, sure. She dresses in overalls and like tries to appeal to, well, there's already enough anyway.
Hey.
That's where they send those people to NXT. but there was like a lot of like little fun, goofy segments. I feel as though AEW was trying a little bit harder to build some stuff up. I liked the stuff with Darby and Sting a lot. Speaking of bad acting, somebody smearing raspberry jam over Neil Breen's face. I mean, Papa Buck's face and him trying to sell that. But, you know, as bad as he was, I think Jericho and MJF more than made up for it, you know, with their overacting as, you know, essentially them being the Riddler and Two-Face from Batman Forever, like how over the top they were. And I really like the main event. There was no one strong match on NXT this week, but there was definitely a strong match or two on AEW this week. So that's why my chips go over there.
All right.
So that puts us at 22 for NXT, 35 for AEW. Me, 24 NXT, 33 AEW. And then the guest, of course, has 1 AEW and 0 NXT.
In a year or two, when we have another guest, maybe that'll change.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, this feels like it's been forever, Adam, because it's time for you to assign me some watching wrestling homework.
I know. I was almost getting ready to wait for the pause there, but I forgot we don't have a jingle. So we could get on that. We need like a show homework jingle. But yeah, so it is my job to assign some homework, and Joe, I still have some stuff kind of in the queue, you know, just fail safe, some stuff that people recommended to me. I do have some terrible Japanese wrestling that Ed Cody recommended, and there's some other stuff, you know, some old WCW 2000 stuff, but, you know, that's all too good to watch, you know. I do usually like to recommend bad stuff. And obviously I tweeted out last night that I had considered making us watch The Best of Alexa Bliss, but that was like 3.5 hours long. And that only covers like the first third of her career. So that would have been way too much to watch. But Joe, I am reminded this week of something that you say a lot. And that is, if I assign something bad, I am forcing myself to watch something bad. So with that in mind, I'm going to take it easy on everybody as well as myself and not go horrible. And there's something that I've been meaning to watch recently. You know, every once in a while it'll pop into my brain and I'll be like, oh, I haven't seen that in years. I should watch it. And I learned that you shouldn't do anything wrestling related if you can't also do it for the show. You know, it's like killing two birds with one stone. So celebrating almost the 21-year anniversary is, because this was released is on March 17th of 2000, we are going to rewatch the documentary Beyond the Mat, Joe.
Oh, hey, get out of town. I could do that.
Yeah, you know what? It's something that in the first year or two that it was released, I might have watched it 3 or 4 times, but I probably have not watched it since 2003 through 2004. So it's been a long time since I've seen it. And I think it would be fun to look back at it with like 2021's lens.
Yeah, hey, this is a classic film. I'm gonna have a lot of fun.
See that? I'm not a monster. Sometimes I'm kind. Obviously, I don't have a matchless scene to go down, but you know, obviously, for anybody who's seen it, you know what you're in for. If you haven't seen it, this is really a cool snapshot of like 1999 wrestling. You know, you have Terry Funk in there, Mick Foley, Jake Roberts, you got Darren Drozdoff, he's gonna puke! A lot of classic stuff that you might know just from seeing snippets and GIFs and like hearing people reference it. And so if you haven't seen it, it'll be an interesting view. And for Joe and myself, you know, I don't know, Joe, how long has it been since you watched this? What, like a week? A month?
No, you'd be surprised. It has been a while. But I saw this in the theaters. You know, some friends of ours at the time were like, okay, we heard that it's playing in Philly, and you got to bear in mind, this is 1999. So we drove down to a theater, and it wasn't playing, so I think we ended up watching Ready to Rumble instead. Then it actually ended up playing a little bit more wide, and it was a release up here, and it was like a pre-officially dating date with my wife-to-be.
Ah. There you go.
Back when she cared about wrestling.
Yeah, I did not see this until it was on DVD, but I bought it as soon as it came out on DVD. And then I don't know how many years later they came out with like a director's cut or like an extended edition, but that's the one that's currently in my collection.
Yeah, and I'm almost certain that I own this as well. And I'll also say that if you are so inclined, I'm almost certain that this is in full on YouTube as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so, you know, if you don't own it and you don't know what streaming service is on, it's on YouTube, the free one.
Nice. Okay, cool. I'm looking forward to watching. Like I said, I was planning on watching it. I've had the itch for a couple of weeks now, and I figured it would be a good time to just combine it with the show.
Yeah. Hey, this is a fun one. I like this. This is good.
Yeah. And then in a couple of weeks when it's my turn again, you know, I'll go full monster again.
All right. So we do have one more thing to discuss, and this was the different homework that Adam had recommended, and this was reading a comic book entitled The Invasion from Planet WrestleTopia. And this is written and created by, and again, I really want to apologize, gentlemen, Ed Kunell and Matt Enten.
That would have been my guess, yeah.
Of Suspicious Behavior Productions. And I think that comes out through, where was it? I had it in the show notes last week that, like, it's through Starburns something or other. And I know Starburns is a What the hell's the guy's name? He was Starburns on
Community.
But then he was a bunch of other shit as well. And he's a guy who got his act together. He was kind of living free and wild for a long time. I feel bad. Starburn Industry Press. And he also has like a podcast network as well. So he's kind of branching out a bit, you know, these days, as it were. God damn it. I feel so bad that I can't remember the guy's name. It's like... and I'm spending too much time on this for something so influential, but it's one of those things that's stuck in my head, you know, that I need to know what it is. Anyway, enough. Fuck that. So we read the first issue of the 6-issue miniseries, entitled A Date with Destiny, right?
Yeah.
It is available. And again, it is available through, Comixology digitally, and they are going to be doing a Kickstarter here in the near future, to do like a print version, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this story, and again, I do want to apologize if I mess up some of the character names, right? Because I did not take extensive notes, but, you know, you have your late 90s, early 2000s kind of like wrestling tropes in there, if that makes any sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a character that's like a heel, kind of a rock type character, I guess maybe you'd say.
It's rock and roll Rory Landell.
There you go. So he is being set up to win the title, and then it turns out that as the whole build is being set up for him to be the new champ, as he is taking on Boy Scout Bob Schultz.
Yep.
And again, so before we continue on any further, I just want to say that I enjoyed the bit that here it is supposed to be like this booming industry of wrestling in like the late 90s, early 2000s, but all of the shows take place in like... dumps, and by dumps I mean it's like, oh well, this was over in Idaho, and you know, you're gonna go up to Alaska, where it's like taking place in like all like shithole cities and states and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And even though this is like, it's wrestling, so it's like the biggest thing in the world, the undercard still has a guy wrestling a bear.
All right, well, I kind of get what you're saying, but the way I took it is, you have again our main character Rory is talking to the promoter, Dick Drazen, Drazen or whatever. And they're commenting about how they're just coming off of one of the biggest pay-per-view buy numbers that they ever had. So I took it to mean like, okay, this first venue, while it might not have been drawn to convey that, this was kind of like your Madison Square Garden type arena. And then later on, spoiler, when Rory... you know, goes into business for himself and ends up in smaller things, smaller venues, then he's competing at like the bingo hall at the casino, you know? So I thought that my interpretation of this was that at least this was like a moderately sized television arena. And I get what you're saying about the bear and show some respect. It's Kodiak Jack. I get what you mean by it's being a trope of like very old wrestling. But, like, I freaking love that. I popped huge when I saw the bear being trained for his title match later on in the card.
For sure. So Rory then learns that because of that heavy buy rate that Adam mentioned that they had, that they're not going to put the title on him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has a guy who's kind of like his mentor who kind of gives it to him and says, listen, you know, sometimes you got to roll with the punches. You take the cards that you're dealt. And he talks about how he has to go out and play like an Asian stereotype, and he's not even Asian, he's from Hawaii. And I thought that was like a nod to Mr. Fuji, who was not Japanese, who was Hawaiian, but played a Japanese stereotype for the entirety of his career. And he essentially, and then another nod where he says his old partner, Swamp Gas Charlie, where he essentially says that like, if he had a little turkey farm with 10,000 turkeys on it, he could eat a turkey a day for the rest of his life. And then these promoters could line up to kiss his ass. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, whether intentional or not, I think that was a shadow nod to the Yokozuna and his love of turkey ass, if you will. So Rory gets the idea that if he can't win the title, he's just going to create his own championship and kind of go into business for himself on TV, essentially shooting his own angle and declaring himself the champion of the galaxy, which is now bigger than the champion of the world. this ends up getting him fired. His buddy ends up going along with him. He ends up leaving his woman there while they go and do those shit towns that I'd mentioned before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, immediately Rory's down on his luck. He's a mess. He's drunk. He's, you know, let himself go in just a few days. He's already a disaster, right?
Yeah, it didn't seem like a lot of time passed, you know.
No, when they walk out of the building, it literally says a few days later.
Yeah, it basically Don, his mentor, makes the comment that he's worn out his welcome with every promoter. And I'm like, man, that was quick, you know, for a guy that was the top heel and what we assume was the biggest, you know, one of the bigger wrestling promotions, already can't work for the little dirt promotions, the shindies.
Right. So him and Don, the mentor, end up parting ways. So Rory is going to go out of the open road by his lonesome. However, those television transmissions have now gone across the galaxy to whatever the other planet is, into the eye holes of Manifest Destiny, who is the actual champion of the galaxy for real. And now at the end of issue one, it looks like he's going to be coming to Earth.
Yes, because there can only be one galactic champion, Joe.
Right.
You know, and we'll kind of give our thoughts overall in a minute. Just a couple things I wanted to point out. Again, the bear that we talked about, or that I love so much, Kodiak Jack. I want to point out, because give credit where it's due, he defeated Cousin Orville for the Metro Midwestern television title. So good on him. Looking forward to following his career. I mean, and also the Intergalactic Championship of the Universe that Rory claimed for himself was basically just a pizza box that he saw. When he was kind of thinking about Don's advice, he looked over, saw the title belt, and then looked a little further and saw the pizza box and kind of put two and two together. So I wanted to point that out. But obviously, this is the first issue of a 6-issue mini, and all of them are out. And while the homework was to only read the first issue, I do have the other 5, and I plan on reading them. But overall thoughts, like, what is this, you know, as a wrestling fan, where does this leave you?
And So I thought this was a nice, light, fun read. Very straightforward, as you mentioned. Very much plays to a today's wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only issue with this is, of course, you know, you're carving yourself into such a niche of a niche that this is strictly for a comic book fan who's a wrestling fan, which you would think there's a lot of crossover of that, but it's getting that into that person's hand, whether it be someone who's an avid comic book reader, who's maybe a lapsed wrestling fan, or someone who's a wrestling fan who like knows the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
It's getting this book into those two groups' hands and getting them together. And of course, you know, one, letting the people who are avid comic book readers and avid wrestling fans and getting into their hands. And, you know, one can only hope that this helps you with our recommendation to certainly check it out. I could just see, though, if you just thought this looked cool, because I thought some of the designs on the characters, especially the space characters, looked really cool and unique. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of those characters appear. And listen, there's a wrestling bear in it. What more do you want?
Yeah.
You know, they could have gone like a lot more. And again, I hate using this term, but like monkey cheese, where it's just like we're just throwing out random words and random things for a laugh. But I feel as though like any laugh that's in this is kind of earned. Mm-hmm. You know, my only concern is like a little bit of point of entry if you're not like a wrestling super fan.
I get what you're going to say. And my next point was going to be there's two things that you can do in a wrestling related non-wrestling project. Follow me on this. Like, let's just say if you watch Young Rock at all, you know, Young Rock tries to introduce, oh, these are heels. And what a heel means is this. And this is a baby face. And a baby face means this. So like this comic could have done, it could have thrown a bunch of insider terms out there and then had to explain them, which I wouldn't have liked. Or it could have thrown a bunch of insider terms out there and not explained it, which would have made it difficult to be accessible for a non-wrestling fan, which I also wouldn't have liked. And I think that this comic was good in that it talked about wrestling, but it didn't try to be too inside for its own good, if that makes sense. You know, right. Like, you can read this as a very, very, very casual wrestling fan and still get what's going on. You know, you don't have to have inside knowledge, and it doesn't try to be too smart for that good. You know, so that I did enjoy. It's set in the wrestling world, but it's not trying to cater to smart marks. You know, it's just, hey, wrestling fans who like comic book stuff, you know?
For sure.
But I enjoyed it. You know, I definitely... I'm going to read the rest of them. We're not going to cover them, but, you know, I definitely agree. Check this out on Comixology.
Absolutely.
Cool.
And some other stuff that you could check out, of course, is Jerry's Internet Wrestling Emporium. You can sign up your first 5 days, new subscribers on us using the promo code @odds. And Jerry's Internet Wrestling Emporium, of course, independentwrestling.tv. This weekend, there is four shows, actually. Three on Saturday, two of them that are head-to-head, and they have, like, an option where you could pick and choose whatever one you want. ICW is running Pit Fighter X6 and No Holds Barred 10. And, you know, listen, I'll just say this. It's a lot of the same talent, again, and that's... If you're going to be running shows during a pandemic, let's not bring in, like, different people for every show, I guess. But the ICW Pit Fighter X6 has Gary J versus Tony Deppen, which should be pretty awesome. And then their No Holds Barred Volume 10 has Nolan Edward taking on Tony Deppen. Tony Deppen really getting around, having a lot of good matches. Also on Saturday, Violence X Suffering is doing their show Violence of the Lambs, as I look down my glasses disapprovingly, which is going to feature Too Cold Scorpio taking on Ken Broadway, Mance Warner taking on JTG, Jimmy Lloyd taking on Jimmy Jacobs, which is a very strange match to be happening. I think this might be Jimmy Jacobs' first at least high-profile wrestling match in many, many months. And then also on Sunday, No Peace Underground is doing a Horrors of Survival match. And Pero is taking on Tony Deppen. And I had a conversation on Twitter the other day with Pero about him playing General Zod. He seems like an all right fella. And like I said, Tony Deppen seemingly has the hot hand on the indies right now. So keep your eyes on him. But, you know, listen, sign up. Watch all those shows or some of those shows or none of those shows, or maybe check out some of those Chikara shows that I mentioned, or just go tooling around, type in the name of your favorite wrestling superstar, and I'm sure they have a show or a match or a something on independentwrestling.tv.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe, there's other podcasts out there that people should listen to.
What?
Yep. When you're done listening to our podcast in triplicate, you should go and check out our friends on the soon-to-be-named network, such as Final Wrestling Place and their other show, Viewer's Choice. Once again, they were very iffy about reviewing Elimination Chamber this week. I feel like they're not very good at picking a strong side, those two. They keep settling out of court.
I know...
All right. Anyways,
I think it might be a little bit more fun when they review a non World Wrestling Entertainment pay per view.
All right. So check that out. See if you agree or disagree. Wednesday Night War, Long Box Heroes, Wrestling Cheers, Pod Van Dam, Between the Sheets, The House Show Podcast, and The A Show.
And I would also be remiss to mention, this weekend, as you're listening to this, the 35% sale is going on over at our TeePublic store, tinyurl.com/longboxheroes, since that's the mothership of the soon-to-be-named network. It'll get you over there. Not only can you find shirts inspired by this show, you can also find shirts inspired by Final Wrestling Place and shirts inspired by Longbox Heroes, After Dark, everything there. And I say shirts, I say designs. You can get those designs on any and all things that you would like. And it's 35% off everything until the end of the day on Friday.
Cool.
And I think, oh, okay. So last but not least, as we wrap up the show here, it's time for weekly purchases.
That's right, Joe. Our hit, semi-recurring, totally original segment, Weekly Purchases. Last week, we had talked about me intimating that I had purchased something shameful on eBay, and I was going to give you the opportunity to kind of guess what it is before I share it to the world. And Joe, I have to tell you, there is a twist to this. So I'm going to figure out how to turn on my camera. Can you see me?
Yes.
All right. I don't know how to make it bigger. So
no, I could see you.
Okay. But yeah, so I have obviously the item that I purchased on online, we'll say. And you're feel free to kind of guess what it is, and then I'll reveal and see if you are right, and then you can shame me.
Okay, so I just want to go over my, since I had no big boy purchases this week.
Okay.
I did, if you listen to Longbox Heroes After Dark, I go into a little bit more so my wheelings and dealings of those, if you're so inclined. But I did purchase two more of the missing issues of Previews that I need for the Patreon bonus show. There are 1994 issues of Previews, so we're not going to get them to them for another 3 years. But again, it's two pieces of the collection, and never pay full price on eBay. Never.
Yep.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I didn't purchase anything interesting other than this. I think I pre-ordered the Fan Takeover Amazon exclusive Elite of Johnny Gargano, and I had to pre-order the Christian one just to hedge my bets because they were labeled wrong.
Yeah, they mentioned that on Hawkins and Broski this week when it comes out, that they were up on Amazon, or they were up on Amazon, but they were all mislabeled.
Yeah, so like I wanted the Gargano, but the Gargano, the one that shows the picture of Gargano was labeled as Orton, and then the one that was labeled as Gargano showed Christian, so I figured if I buy the one that's labeled Gargano and the one that's pictured Gargano, I'm bound to get at least one Gargano, and then I can flip the other one, so we'll
see. And I guess those are not available on Ringside?
No, they are an Amazon exclusive.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of the elites are slowly becoming either Amazon exclusives or Target exclusives. So you kind of got to get them when you can get them.
Interesting. So we're going to do 20 questions, but I want to start this off by saying you said on Twitter that this was not ring worn gear.
That is correct.
Okay. That wasn't a lie. That hasn't changed.
Nope.
Okay. So 20 questions. And you said that I'm going to be mad or embarrassed or ashamed of you?
I think I'm exaggerating a bit, but and again, there is a little bit of a twist at the end of the story that'll make matters worse, but okay. I'm gonna say that it's one of those things where if I can see your face right now, you'd put your head down and just shake your head back and forth. That's all
right. Well, let me see if I can put my camera on. I don't even know what I look like right now. I'm probably the human disaster that's only me. Oh, my camera's not even there. We go.
Oh, this is why there's not a video element in our show.
Right. I'm about 7 months off a haircut, and I'm about 5 months off a shave. So taking that all into consideration. So 20 questions, and I'm not asking the questions yet. I'm reiterating facts that you've already put out there.
Okay.
It was shipping from somewhere in Florida.
Yes.
I'm surprised it didn't get lost. And there was no video of your whoever delivered it, like, poorly delivering it.
No. That's been nipped in the bud. My letter carrier gently puts things down now.
Okay. So, is this an AEW superstar item?
It is not.
Is it a WWE superstar item?
It is.
Okay. Is it a female WWE superstar item?
Yes.
Okay. Now, see? Okay. Now, maybe you got something for me. Is it the sweater that Bayley wore on SmackDown this past week?
I can't outbid Dwight on that. That's the problem.
Dwight or the boar? Anyway.
Yeah.
Dwight doesn't have his money anymore. He got fleeced.
That's true. That's true. Oh. It is not.
Who would have saw that coming, huh? I'm surprised they didn't talk about it on Super Fantastic last week. They had the right people there to do it. Anyway. Okay. So it's something Alexa Bliss.
It is.
Okay. Now, this is the thing. It's not ring-worn gear. So that makes it kind of difficult because that would have been the easy thing. It's like, oh, it's ring-worn gear.
Mm-hmm. And I've already said that ring-worn gear, while I don't own any, a little out of my price range.
Now, is this something that you can get sniffs out of?
No.
Okay. Now, I don't even know if this exists. Mm. Is there a, like, Lady Fiend replica belt of Alexa Bliss?
There, to the best of my knowledge, there is not.
Okay. Is this one of those plaques where it's like, oh, it's the night Alexa Bliss won the whatever, so it's like a piece of the canvas on a plaque that's like signed by her?
While I have looked into those in the past, it is not.
Okay. So like I did a poor job of describing it, but you know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So again, it's not gear. Is it boots?
That would be considered gear. So okay. Now. Okay.
So she was in that Bowling for Soup video that was supposed to be one of the songs at WrestleMania last year. Is it like a gold record signed by her?
No, it is not.
Again, it's not real gear. It's not ring-worn gear. You showed what the box looks like.
Or did I?
Have to ask.
Or did I?
Okay. So I have to ask, is it an Alexa Bliss real doll or sex robot?
Unfortunately, they don't make those yet, so no.
Yes, being the operative word.
I've already signed up to be notified.
Okay. I know Gilbert Gottfried's got the Scarlett Johansson one locked down. I think they only make one a person. Okay, I'm stumped.
Okay.
I can't even, like, I've exhausted every idea of what memorabilia item it could be. The fact that I haven't, like, I think it was easy that it could have been, you know, Alexa Bliss. Yeah. But you are someone who has purchased locks of hair of someone to add to the ball. They don't have much hair left.
All right, so I will say you were very, very close, but I feel like you were trying to be overly specific with, like, saying a gold record or something like that.
Okay.
So out of all of my collection, I do not own anything signed by Alexa.
Okay.
So I did pick up something signed.
Oh, shit. Is it an Elite signed by her?
No. I'm not a big fan of signed figures because I feel like...
Because you open everything.
Oh, yeah. You know me. I'm a Lucy collector.
Yeah.
All right. So I don't know how this is going to come across on the video, but it has since been framed.
So, I'm seeing my own reflection back over Alexa Bliss's face. That's distressing.
All right. So I'll send you the picture in 1 second. But
Don't drop it!
What's that?
I said, oh, don't drop it!
Yeah. So let me just send it to you real quick here. But it's an 11 by 14 photo of Alexa Bliss that is signed. And I'm going to tell you exactly why I had to get this one and why I've been holding off for a while on getting something. And I'm about to type into my contacts Alexa, but it's got to be Joe. So I'm sending this over to you and you'll see it when you get it. The reason why this one needed to be the one is it's bigger than an 8 by 10.
Okay.
It's an 11 by 14, so it kind of stands out a little bit better. Let me know if you got it.
I got it.
All right. It is signed with a paint pen, which you are a fan of Brian Myers, you know is the best way to go. It stands out better, you know, as opposed to just a Sharpie or whatever. It is JSA certified, so it's not just some schlub that got her at an airport. You know,
it's
a good certification. And I will point this out that as an Alexa fanboy, if you take a look at her signature, you know, if you take a look there, you can clearly see.
Now I'm shaking my head.
Yes. You can clearly see that it says Alexa Bliss. Now, the reason why that's important is when she was in NXT, she had a scribble signature. It was just like blah 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 blah, just really quickly scribbled.
Sure.
Then when she was in the early days of WWE, like the first year or two, she signed like she did on that picture where it's very legible. All right. And then recently she switched back to the scribble signature. So like the window has closed on her signing her name in a legible fashion, just because she's probably sick of signing shit.
Right.
You know, so she's switched to the scribble signature again. So I'm like, okay, it's the right certification. It's a paint pen. It's the signature that I wanted. And it's the Harley Quinn look, which is the height of powers, Alexa Bliss. So that's why I bought it. And it's hanging prominently in my living room.
Well, it's not. You showed it to me.
Well, it will be. That's where I
it
took
will
it
be. The wall. There's a spot, yeah, right.
I brought it. There's already a spot for it. Now, Joe, here's the thing. That was not in the picture that I tweeted out. All right?
Okay.
But this is where the twist is, and this is where you're going to be super duper ashamed.
I'm glad I didn't turn my video off, I guess. Go ahead.
Yes. All right, so the other day when I tweeted out, hey, here's this picture, here's this package, and it might be related to the mystery item, whatever. I did not know what was in that box.
Okay.
My Ring doorbell went off, and I saw FedEx carrying that giant box up, and I was like, I am not expecting anything from FedEx or anything at all today.
Sure.
So I go and I get the package off my front porch, and that says it's from WWE Shop. All right, and I did not order anything from WWE Shop. However, a friend of the show, Derek, who does our Photoshops every once in a while.
Sure.
I hooked him up. He is a collector of those arcade cabinets, you know, those one-up arcade.
Yeah.
And the importer-exporter business had an exclusive Marvel versus Capcom version that sold out instantly and is going for like double, triple on eBay or whatever. So he was getting all ready to spend secondary market pricing. I stepped in. I was like, no, let me see if I can track one down for you. I got you one. So long story short, as like a thank you, he ordered me something off of WWE Shop. And that was what was inside that giant box.
Okay.
And now, Joe, here's the thing. I absolutely love this thing, but I can never... Like, this has to go away when company comes over.
Okay. Because that was going to be one of my questions that I was going to ask was, is this something that you need to hide when company comes over? The Alexa Bliss signed picture, no. That's respectable. Yes.
That's signed memorabilia. You've never been at my house, but, like, literally every room in my house has framed signed memorabilia, whether it be wrestling, baseball, football, whatever. This needs to be hidden, Joe. And I'm not going to tell you what it is. But I'm going to make sure that I can show it to you, and I'm just going to watch your reaction.
Okay. Life size, huh?
Life size, cardboard cutout of Flexiblist.
Now, that's not Height of Powers, though, but that's the only one they had.
This is the NXT era.
Okay.
NXT gear. She has the red highlights in her hair as opposed to, like, pink or whatever. But with that being said, I mean, if they want to make a more updated version, as long as it's not like overall kitty Alexa, I might have been awakened of a new collecting area. But yes,
buddy Joey, who does Kayfabe Collectibles, he still has, you know, from back in the Attitude Era, I think he has a Bret Hitman Hart cardboard standee.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the background now. So, yeah, it's an Alexa Bliss cardboard standee. Again, this isn't a Video Element show, but he had to get my reaction to this. But if you wanted to buy that Bret Hart one with your scratch and that cardboard itch, I guess. I don't know what those things are made of. Plywood, something probably stain resistant, I'm sure. If you want to buy the Bret Hart one, I can get Ed's new address from Jess, and I can have you send the Bret the Hitman Hart one out to him.
Yeah, I mean, they are made of cardboard. It does not look like it's moisture resistant, so I have to keep it away from like the sink and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
You know? Yeah. Sure. Don't spill anything on it, but but yes, this is the thing that makes my other Alexa acquisition look tame in comparison.
So how many Alexa items are you away from needing a dedicated Alexa space in your room or your house or whatever.
I mean, I'll be completely honest with you. If you don't count a couple t-shirts, I have like maybe three shirts and I can't wear any of them anyways. They're all way too big on me now.
Sure.
So I literally own the signed picture I just bought, this cardboard cutout, four elites and one basic. That's all I got. Okay. I have no other merch. So if anybody wants to buy anything and send it my way, by all means.
I don't know, man.
Enough for a small shrine, but not a wing of the house.
That's what I mean. Like, I wasn't sure how far, like, she doesn't have her own Detolf yet.
No.
But you could certainly put this behind a Detolf.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like, this was, I put this together and felt dirty for a little while. And I put it in the podcasting room, in the comic room slash office, whatever. I'm like, okay, this is a room where it's going to be. I'll use it as a backdrop if I ever do a video podcast or whatever. And then, like, I was like, I don't get to see it as often as I'd like. So now it's just in my living room next to my TV.
This is going to be like some sort of like Lars and the Real Girl shit going on with this thing.
As long as it doesn't start talking back to me, I'm okay. I'm allowed to talk to it, but if I start hearing voices back, then you need to look into getting me help.
I think during the later Attitude Era days, they had ones like for Rock and Stone Cold, Undertaker, maybe Triple H, maybe even Jericho at one point that had like a voice gimmick on them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, you know how like WWE like at that point had like the shitty shirts that you could buy that had like voice things on the shirt too?
Yeah.
Where it's like you're wearing a normal shirt, but there's a giant box inside the shirt, right?
Yeah.
So it would just be one of those giant boxes that you would just put on the back of the thing. You would flip the switch on, and there might have been like a motion sensor thing that anytime somebody would walk by, they'd be like, oh, no, you're old, jabroni, or some shit like that. You know, I think the box for the Alexa Bliss one says, help, help, I'm in trouble. That's just standard issue on those. But no, listen, we all like what we like. You know, I have a box downstairs in my basement of all my Mick Foley stuff from when I was, you know, hardcore actively collecting that sort of stuff. You know, you, Adam, watching this could see all the graphic novels and shit, and you could see the toys that are over there. And like, this does need to be cleaned up a little bit in here so that the figures do have a little bit better. And I think what the impetus on that's going to be is when the Brian Super 7 figure comes in.
Yeah.
When the Brian Super 7 figure comes in, I'm going to need to, like, kind of rearrange stuff.
Yeah, because that's a big box, and I don't know if you're planning on keeping it in the box, because it does look nice in the box.
I'm an in-box guy. Yeah.
I was thinking of getting a second one. I don't know.
I don't know. I think you can still pre-order them, just not through Super 7.
Yeah, through Ringside.
Yeah.
You get the 10% and all that stuff, but
I think you can get them through Diamond as well.
Interesting. I'll have to speak to our local comic shop and see what the deal is.
Well, I'm turning my video off. That's enough of me.
All right. Fair enough. Same here.
Or I think that's fine too. No, I don't want background effects. All right. So hopefully no more weekly purchases next week. Hopefully we all save our money.
No promises.
No promises, exactly. All right.
That's all I got, Joe.
So that's it for the show. Episode 127 of At Odds with Wrestling. Thank you very much for indulging us this week. For Adam, this is Joe saying thanks for listening, enjoy some wrestling, and be safe.
You're listening to the soon-to-be-named network, the Lamborghini of podcast networks.